From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Americans are once again talking about police brutality. These conversations have come after 29-year-old Tyre Nichols was brutally beaten by five officers with the Memphis Police Department last month. He died in a hospital 3 days later. Those five officers have been charged with murder and fired. A sixth officer was fired soon after, and as of yesterday, seven more officers are facing internal investigations and further discipline in Nichols' death. The incident is the latest in a line of nationally known victims of police misconduct, including George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Laquan McDonald, and Michael Brown. But the case of Tyre Nichols has a distinction. The officers involved looked like the victim. That is, the five police officers who beat Nichols were black themselves. All this has raised questions about not just individual actors in police departments, but the entire justice system in America and the role of African Americans in it. Joining us to talk about this is Jamira Trapp, who is a detective with the Chicago Police Department and also spent many years as a patrol officer. Detective Trapp, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you.
And also with us is Milton Nett Craig, who is an assistant professor of criminal justice and criminology at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. She was previously on the faculty at Illinois State University and was here for one of our conversations on policing after the killing of George Floyd in 2020. Professor Craig, welcome back to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, as ever, you can join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Professor Craig, I want to begin with you, and I want to actually begin with a clip. We have some tape of President Biden addressing Tyre Nichols' family yesterday during his State of the Union address.
There's no words to describe the heartache or grief of losing a child, but imagine. Imagine if you lost that child at the hands of the law. Imagine having to worry whether your son or daughter came home from walking down the street, playing in the park, or just driving a car. Most of us in here have never had to have the talk that brown and black parents have had to have with their children. Bo, Hunter, Ashley, my children, I never had to have the talk with them. I never had to tell them if a police officer pulls you over, turn your interior lights on right away. Don't reach for your license. Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Imagine having to worry like that every single time.
Professor Craig, I wonder what was your response to the death of Tyre Nichols?
My initial response, of course, was grief, like many others, but it was disappointment that things have not improved. Not that we expected it to happen overnight, but especially because this one was caught in such vivid detail, it was very difficult to even read about. I'm very glad that President Biden addressed this issue in the State of the Union. I think it was almost an about face from his position last year, focusing on, you know, increasing officer presence and increasing funding. The fact that he directly called out this trend as problematic was actually quite refreshing in some respects.
Detective Trapp, I want to bring you into the conversation now. I wonder, what was your response when you first heard or read about the death of Tyre Nichols?
Thank you. Before I start, I just want to say the views and opinions that I'm expressing today is representation of my own experience in law enforcement and don't represent, it's not a representation of my department or the members of my department. I just was numb, sad. I felt disgusted, angry. That was my reaction.
I wonder, was it any different from previous incidents like this? I'm thinking of George Floyd or even in Chicago, Laquan McDonald.
For me, the only difference was more how graphic it was to see more of the details in the moments. But anytime I see any misconduct, it's disgusting.
And I know you said you're speaking for yourself, and of course we can only talk to our own experiences, but I wonder what is it like going into work after one of these big media moments? This was all the in the national news, local news. Is this something that you and your colleagues talk about, these kind of incidents?
You know what? Thank you for that question, because that day when we knew that the video was going to be released, we were on standby to be deployed. And so we ended up having to work 12 hours that day, and, you know, we were deployed to different locations, and the people that I work with, everyone had the same reaction. They were very disgusted, numb. A lot of people didn't even want to, I limited my intake of what I saw, just because I felt it so viscerally. And going into being in work and just almost like you're on edge, like, okay, what's going to be revealed? How are the citizens going to react? Is it going to be another 2020 again? Like you just are like on edge and sadness. It's just a mix of intense emotions.
Professor Craig, I mentioned we previously spoke with you back in 2020 after it was unfortunately a similar discussion after the killing of George Floyd. You mentioned your disappointment at the lack of change. Can you talk about how policing has changed in the past few years?
I think that there have been steps with many agencies towards transparency. So there have been several that released their traffic stop data, having community town halls and other engagement opportunities. But on a whole, these are almost, their impact is very surface, and there hasn't been true attention to the problems that are embedded within the policing institution. So the outward facade may look good, but clearly the problems are still there and haven't changed on a large scale across the country like we need it to change. Because had it changed and there had been on the ground effects, then Tyree would still be here.
Yeah, you mentioned surface. I don't know if you can give a few examples of that. Are you thinking of the more widespread use of body cameras, for example, or take it where you will?
Body cameras are a part of it. I think they became more of a high point of discussion. So agencies that didn't have them worked towards adopting that policy or that reform. But in terms of, you know, trying to reassure the community, trying to make sure they looked more transparent and more accountable. So we have seen, like I said, those steps with some agencies, but you know, checking off the boxes of different reforms isn't substantive, right? So we remember the Eight Can't Wait campaign that started, I think, about 2016, and it definitely picked up media attention and social media attention following George Floyd's murder. And it talked about these eight initiatives that can reduce the use of force, especially deadly force, during police-citizen interactions. And while a number of agencies already had them in place or adopted them, we still see this type of misconduct. And so one of those that, of course, is in our, you know, burned into our memory is the death of Eric Garner. And so even at that time, NYPD told its officers not to use choke holds or carotid holds, and it still happened, and it resulted in Eric Garner's death. So the changes need to be more than, all right, we've checked the box for diversity training, or we have, you know, now instituted body cameras. It actually needs to be substantive, where citizens in these disadvantaged neighborhoods do not feel hyper-police by overpresence and simultaneously under-police and not getting the service that they are looking for.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about policing and specifically the relationship between Black communities and Black police officers. Of course, this comes after the brutal beating of Tyre Nichols by five officers with the Memphis Police Department. He was a Black man. They were Black men. They have been fired and charged with murder. Other officers are being investigated in that case. We're talking about this with Professor Miltonette Craig of Sam Houston State University in Texas. She's a professor of criminal justice there. Also, Jamira Trapp, who is with the Chicago Police Department. She's a detective there, although, as we've said, she is here in her own capacity, not as a representative of the department. And Detective Trapp, can you talk about how you have seen policing change in light of George Floyd, Laquan McDonald, going all the way back to Eric Garner over your time as a law enforcement officer?
Yes. First, before I definitely agree with what Professor Craig said about the surface level changes in terms of more transparency, in terms of more, you know, things, you know, implementing different things. And so those things that she listed are the same things that I've also seen. And I felt that they were just like, okay, it's deeper. We need to get to the root of this. So with my particular unit that I've been in, I've actually had a conversation with my lieutenant. And since July, we've had three officer wellness days called No More Bypassing. And those officer wellness days were, we brought in, you know, massage therapists, therapy dogs, different healing modalities, Reiki, craniosacral therapists, different offered EAP, then, you know, brought in counselors to come to the actual office where detectives are working and offer support. Because when the, like what the professor said, we need to get to the root cause. If we have two communities of people, like, you know, people who work in law enforcement, they're stressed, they're dealing with things that trauma after trauma, helping so many people, and then they're not able to properly process these things, it's inevitable that it's going to spew out into the community. Not saying that it's acceptable, but it's inevitable. So how could the department, how could we provide the officers with tools to regulate their nervous system, to be present, to show up professionally, to be courteous, in spite of all the things? Because a lot of, when, since all these incidents, misfortunate incidents happened, you know, officers had their days off canceled, or they had to work 12-hour days and, you know, at very short notices. So the mental and emotional health component is what I'm very passionate about. And I've been able to speak with, you know, my boss, and she's been actually, you know, very instrumental in making sure that this gets implemented in the unit that I'm working in. And hopefully it can trickle and expand externally.
Can you say more about that, about how it sounds like you're describing what a lot of people say now is burnout, right, in a lot of different industries. And we know that a lot of departments have seen staff reductions, or either because people are leaving or maybe not enough colleagues have been replaced in the view of some departments. You mentioned working 12-hour days. Do you see a relationship between burnout? I mean, do you find yourself maybe getting shorter with people you're interacting with in the community when you're working, you know, coming to the end of a 12-hour shift you know, after days off have been canceled? Talk about that.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm very self-aware and cognizant, and I do use tools to regulate myself, and I seek professional help for my mental and emotional state, so I'm not easily triggered at work, or I'm actually more compassionate when dealing with victims and interacting with citizens and even my coworkers. So if I already have these tools and awareness, I had to imagine, like, what if my colleagues have no level of this self-awareness? So how is this going to show up? And again, like, not saying that the behavior is acceptable, but we also have to look at the science and, like you said, the burnout and what a human's capacity is working in a high stress environment. That's why it's been recently a lot of suicides, a lot of incidents internally that have been happening that it hasn't made the news. And so Now you're working 12-hour days. A coworker has committed suicide, and you have to possibly deal with riots in case something explodes. That even me saying that makes my body tense. So imagine the people who have no self-awareness, how they're coming, and even when they go home as a husband or wife or, mother or daughter.
Yeah, we need to take a break. And thank you for sharing that. I definitely appreciate you sharing that and being here again. We need to take a break, and we're going to continue this conversation when we come back. We are speaking with Detective Jamira Trapp of the Chicago Police Department, although she's here in her own capacity today, not as a spokesperson. Also, Assistant Professor Milton Ett Craig with Sam Houston State University in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology there. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. And we're going to get more into this idea of policing, and particularly how Black officers police Black communities and the tensions that can rise up in that situation. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. More to come on the 21st show. Stay with us. The 21st show, I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Black police officers in Black communities following the killing, the death of Tyre Nichols in Memphis. He was a 29-year-old Black man who was beaten by five Black police officers from the department who have been charged with murder and fired. A number of other officers are facing internal investigations in relation to that incident. We're talking about this with Milton Ett Craig, who is Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Criminology at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. She was previously at Illinois State University and had joined us for another one of these conversations back in 2020 after the killing of George Floyd. We're also speaking with Detective Jamira Trapp, who is with the Chicago Police Department, was also a patrol officer there, although she's here in her own capacity, not as a spokesperson for the department today. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. And Professor Craig, I wonder if you just want to respond to some of the things that the detective was saying about officer wellness and how that can spill out into the community before the break.
Yes, I do think the attention on officer wellness is warranted because we do have to remember that they are people just like us who do experience stress, especially in such a high pressure field. But I do want to almost qualify that by saying, assuming the role of someone with such a huge responsibility and such wide discretion needs to be something that is thought about in depth and, monitored. There should be a lot of self-monitoring as well because of the breadth of the power that law enforcement has. So I think it's a balance between agencies focusing on wellness, but also officers themselves remembering values and ethics and understanding the power of their role.
You know, and Professor, it strikes me that sort of focus on self-regulation and understanding your emotions and trying to control them in your interactions with the public is kind of maybe a polar opposite of what the particular Scorpion unit, as it was called in Memphis, these sort of hyper policing units. Can you talk about the role that they play in this system?
Yes. So the Scorpion unit, Atlanta had the Red Dog initiative, both notably under Chief Davis in both situations. And so while they are good in theory, right, their goal is to focus on one type or multiple types of high occurring crimes in certain neighborhoods. So they kind of spring from a concept called hotspots policing, where resources are focused on areas that have higher crime rates. And again, while that is good in theory, it is bad in practice in many instances, because these high crime rates often happen in very disadvantaged communities where there are high poverty levels. And there is a lot of research that shows the relationship between economic disadvantage and crime rates. And so if resources are constantly deployed into an area that is already lacking, then it's not going to result in good outcomes, right? So if there are more tickets being written, if the person already has financial difficulties, then they won't be able to pay that ticket. And if they don't pay the ticket, their license gets suspended. They still need to go to work. They drive, they get pulled over. Now they get arrested because they're driving with a suspended license. And so it's a snowball effect of being hyper-policed. And it's not a great experience for individuals in these communities. So even after the news of Tyre Nichols' killing made the national news, a lot of residents in that area in Memphis actually, used the terminology that they were being terrorized by the Scorpion unit, and, them coming out in ski masks and being in unmarked cars, and that it was just intimidating and actually scary to even drive around their own neighborhoods. And so if these particular types of units are formed, they need to be carefully planned, and there has to be strict restrictions on what they are allowed to do, because we do not want the community to feel afraid of the individuals who are tasked with protecting and serving them.
Detective Trapp, I wonder if you have a perspective on that sort of style of, what some have called hyper policing.
I definitely see, what every point that the professor just made, especially about the economic disadvantage and, how with the crime rates being high in those communities. You have to have to be even given that amount of quote unquote power and responsibility, you do have to have a lot of self-regulation and self-awareness. And, because even if you're in, I remember being in like a marked squad car in these, certain communities in the neighborhood when I first got on the force, and like the way that the citizens will look at me and even the person I roll with, they're like, don't take these looks personal. So it's almost like what you represent. It's like these two, again, like these two groups of people with so much tension towards each other because of the history. It makes it very explosive and unhealthy. That's all I have to say.
Why did you decide to become a police officer in the first place? What made you pursue this as a calling, as a career?
I always wanted to be three things: a detective, a nurse, and a psychologist. And I feel like right now I'm all three. I have a strong passion and desire to bring more of, I'm a detective, and I have a strong passion to bring a more humanistic approach to policing. And I really want to bridge the gap between the community and the police. It's literally two different perspectives. And, I always say, as a Black woman working in law enforcement, there is racism, there is sexism. I didn't experience that until I became a member of law enforcement. And so it doesn't go away just because I'm at work. It's not this like blue coat that most people think about in terms of, okay, if someone's racist and sexist, they're going to be racist and sexist. It's just going to show up in different ways, microaggression ways. So I just want to be able to dismantle all the stereotypes and really bridge the gap between these two different communities.
That, I think, is a great segue into something else that I've been wondering about. And Professor Craig, I want to pose this question to you. There have been criticism with the way Memphis handled the officers involved in the death of Tyre Nichols, in part because of how quickly the police department fired them, the lack of voices that you often hear from, say, police unions speaking up on behalf of the officers. Do you see that as something notable here, maybe because the officers were themselves Black?
Definitely. The racial dynamics of this incident are staggering because we don't see the rate of swiftness in any other of these high profile police involved deaths, right? So even for instance, there was a December 2022 conviction of the officer who shot and killed Atiana Jefferson. And that event happened in, I think, October of 2019. So just looking at that time frame and the, you know, the speed at which those officers were terminated and charges filed against them, I've never seen that. And those racial dynamics cannot be ignored. And so I think it speaks to what is in the literature. It's a term being Black and blue. Right. So Black officers, right, it's already because of the tense relations between African-American communities and law enforcement. I believe that Black officers take, you know, have to have courage to join the force. And so that speaks to Detective Trapp's willingness to work with her community and try to represent the good side of policing. But as many Black officers have said in the past, even though they are blue, they are Black first. And so they will not receive as many of the benefits as the typical officer would receive, for example, in terms of treatment by, you know, the criminal justice system and other institutions. So until that gap is filled and until the, you know, of course, I'm thinking in ideal terms, but until the race factor is taken out of the experiences of being a Black officer, I think it's notable that many of them acknowledge that their Blackness precludes them from the protections that being an officer would normally have. And again, the racial dynamics of this incident should not be ignored. The swiftness was almost mind-boggling.
Detective Trapp, can you speak on that? Do you feel supported by your colleagues? Or I don't know if you don't want to personalize it, maybe you've seen other colleagues who've faced civilian complaints. Do you think that they're, you know, the white colleagues were supportive of the Black colleagues as they might have been had it been a white officer?
It's going to be very cognizant of how I articulate that. Actually, no comment.
Fair enough. Yeah, I can understand where that would be a difficult question. What do I want to take? Let me take a moment to remind listeners, it's the 21st show. We're speaking with Professor Milton Ett Craig from Sam Houston State University, criminal justice expert there, and Jamira Trapp, who is a detective at the Chicago Police Department, although here on her own, not as a spokesperson for the department. Professor Craig, I think the big question we've been driving toward here is, if the system is broken, if the system is, you know, inherently racist, as some say it is, what does it mean to be a Black officer as part of a broken system? Or maybe it's not even a broken system, right? It's a system working as intended.
You make a very good point with that, with the criticisms of the American policing institution. Right. So there's some arguments about bad apples, but a more thorough argument would be, you know, the barrel itself is rotten. And so even if good apples go in, good apples do not come out. And so this dynamic of representing your community while also, you know, being a member of a group of people who are subject to over-policing must be a very difficult dynamic to deal with. So I can't speak for officers in that position. But again, I know it's something that they have to grapple with on a regular basis, because you are being, you know, torn because of these two sides most of the time that you feel that you need to be loyal to. But I think that Black officers, if they can, and hopefully they are courageous enough to do it, making that dynamic known at the agency level, and showing that this is a, you know, a problem that they have to face. But again, as we talked about, the self-awareness and self-regulation is needed, because it can't just be attributed to what the institution says and what the agency says. There has to be some self-direction with respect to these interactions between residents and police.
Detective Trapp, I mentioned you've been on the force for 10 years. Are things getting better from your perspective with regard to what we've been talking about?
Well, I've been on the force for 13 years, and it is the main thing, and Professor Craig keeps saying that, my favorite word, courage. You need courage. Whatever race you are, you have to have a courage and to have a standalone spirit. Because you said something, you said, is the system working as intended, right? And whatever that may mean, right? Is it intended to keep these communities in this state of oppression and continue to perpetuate the cycle of suffering, right? Or is it, it can mean, have a lot, many different intentions, but I think the intention, the primary intention is, what is the intention of the individuals working for each agency, each department, each unit? And it goes, and I know I just wanted to share this, really, this is one of, something I go into to work with every day with this quote. It says, if the minds of living beings are impure, their land is also impure. But if their minds are pure, so is their land. There is not two lands, pure or impure in themselves. The difference lies solely in the good or evil of their minds. That's a quote from Nietzsche and DeShonen. And that's what I'm all about, the individual regulation. And for me, as a Black woman working in law enforcement for 13 years, it is extremely overwhelming, because I have to be courageous. I have to know the policies, procedures, the statutes, and be willing to articulate when I see things are not being ran in accordance. Or not just saying, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to let that slide or go by. And whether I know the colleague's intent or my coworker's intent, I'm not going to assume, okay, this is racist, this is sexist or whatever. I'm just going to take my position of being the enforcer of making sure things are ran in accordance to policies and procedures.
Detective Jamira Trapp, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your experiences with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me. I really think these type of dialogues are important, and just to hear the inside perspective.
Yeah. Well, thank you again so much. I appreciate your time. And Professor Milton Neck Craig of Sam Houston State University, thank you so much to you as well. It was great to speak with you again.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to take part in this conversation.
More to come on the 21st Show after a moment. Stay with us.